Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm very honored to be able to talk after these eminent speakers. I was asked to look at biodiversity in terms of resilient green revolution. We've seen some very promising returns, but we do have the challenges of a global warming and a changing climate. So, so I want to say this work is based on many people's contributions, collaboration over the last few decades with government of Malawi, with NGOs, with farmer research groups, University of Malawi, Michigan State University, the Rockefeller Foundation, and McKnight Foundation have both contributed to funding Fulbright program most recently, and also CGIAR's, notably ICRISAT. So imagine you're in the the shoes of Mr. Peary here from Malawi. Could you feed your family on an acre and a half or less on a unimodal system with only about 900 millimeters of rainfall, not always arriving in a timely fashion? Well, he and many other smaller farmers have come up with a solution of maize, or in some areas sorghum, and mixtures of maize and sorghum. And certainly this does feed bellies, and we're seeing some dramatic increases in yield with fertilizers. However, is this on a knife edge? And is this nutrient rich? Is this a secure approach? And I think we all have questions about this, though we're very proud to see people able to improve their food security. But how secure is that in a rapidly changing world? Well, as we saw earlier, the FAO and Dr. John Dixon have done an amazing job of characterizing some smaller farming systems around the world, including in Africa. We have particularly the maize belt through east and southern Africa. And then we have mixed cereal systems through West Africa. And these feed over half, and actually the whole livelihoods are dependent for about half of smallers in Africa. So climate change is what I think we really need to be thinking about in the future. I thought when I came to Malawi in 1993 that farmers were facing tremendous challenges and doing an incredible job. But I didn't realize then, the way I'm seeing the data now, that throughout sub-Saharan Africa, we are already in a climate that's hot. We're already under water stress and tremendously, as we saw from Dr. Sanchez's presentation, rainfall dependent systems, where also I want to mention about 85-90% in some countries of livelihoods are based on agriculture. So both selling and, as you can see, market access is minimal. So these smaller farmers are often characterized as subsistence farmers, but actually, in fact, they sell much of their crops, such as maize, often when the market prices are low, and then they have to rebuy later. So they're both consumers and producers, as being shown recently. So input markets and access to output markets are both critical, even for these subsistence farmers. And irrigation is not necessarily an option for many farmers, unlike much of Asia. So how are these rain-fed agricultural systems to move forward? Well, I think education is really, in the end, the answer. So we can't forget that. And as we heard today, it's not just a water drought. There's also, as Sanchez reminds us often, a nitrogen drought. I would say, point out that this is probably because we've gone down this route of highly nitrogen-dependent systems. Maize, and to a lesser extent other cereals, are incredibly nitrogen-philic. They require a lot of nitrogen. And unless you have other crops, or agroforestry systems, as shown in the backward round here, we have gone down a direction where we are now dependent on fossil fuels to a tremendous degree. And as I said, it's not just models that are predicting changes in climate. We actually have evidence of increases in average surface temperature. And even more worrying, 19 out of 20 models in a recent review showed that in the yellow here, and particularly in the red, we're talking about a 20 to 40% decrease in rainfall predicted for the next 20 years, or in this case over 50 years, sorry. And the variability of this rainfall is particularly worrying. We're seeing increases in intensity of rainfall events, and so flooding as well. So erratic rainfall is particularly for through West Africa, as I said, very cereal based, and through Southern Africa. These are going to be really, there's a recent paper in Science showing the vulnerability of these maize and sorghum based systems need to be considered. I do have some good news. As you heard, Malawi is not, is facing severe problems as a small country, the bottom of the Rift Valley, very long, but landlocked, and yet with political will, and not only in terms of what's been called a new emerging green revolution in Malawi. I want to show there's also evidence here from long-term science investments and participatory research and agroecology that there may be opportunities for a more resilient cropping systems emerging from this small country. They face incredible challenges in terms of malnutrition, ongoing issues in terms of resource limitation. Although it's an extreme case with an area where maize is life, unlike much of the region where cassava and sorghum are also important, maize is life in Malawi. In this extreme case, we still have potential in terms of about 900 millimeters of rainfall, and we have political will. In 1994, we saw a change towards democracy in Malawi, commitment by the president to guarantee food security, and then when he was reelected with a landslide recently and made president of the African Union, in part based on this example of commitment to increasing food security in Malawi, now a new initiative called the Green Belt here mentions irrigation, and yet led by Professor Kinyoma Piri, this may also involve other types of greening, as you'll see. So in 1996, the then President Maluzi commissioned the Malawi Maize Productivity Task Force. And so this is scientists, extension workers, university academics, NGO, all committed to, and with the support of international centers, CGIRs such as ICRSAT and CIMIT, to how could we certainly see that the hybrid maizes at the time, MH18 was the latest, had a tremendous potential, but were often staying at the one ton, as you heard, yield. By involving extension staff in every single extension planning unit in Malawi, so doing training of frontline field workers, this was a massive effort. And we have to remember that this Green Revolution in Malawi didn't come out of nowhere. There was, from 1996 to 98, maize fertilizer response trials to look at area-specific fertilizer recommendations, what levels of nitrogen, phosphorus, in some cases zinc and sulfur, but mostly coming back to nitrogen, 1,600-plus sites. And then what has been underreported until now is that then there was an effort that moved into maize rotated with legumes, and that's what I want to talk about today. Diversification with legumes and two-year trials, 1999 through 2001. So legumes, diversification options I'll tell you about in a minute, rotated with maize, and then looking at fertilizer response. So the integrated nutrient management you heard about earlier, but this will show you in depth what this means for stability of the system. And at two sites, my colleagues and I worked on both in southern Malawi and in northern Malawi more recently since 2000. Last 10 years, just north of Mzuzu here, these participatory action sites are very important in terms of understanding farmers' evaluation of the labor investment required, of profitability, of quality of products in terms of their local needs, as well as potential to sell. So development partners have included the Ekwendeni Hospital, where they have a soil food and healthy communities division, so that these nutritionists at this hospital saw early on what is now becoming quite fashionable in terms of, and let's hope it spreads, in terms of that training on nutrition and working with farmers to empower them to try different types of legume diversification could be one of the secrets to seeing improvements in child health. They started sort of trying to reduce stunting of under fives. This is a very simple but critically important goal there. And also involving farmers in a collaborative fashion here, some helping with the soil sieving with students from the university, a central or mother trial where we're looking at different legume diversifications, pigeon pea, you just heard mentioned, and peanuts or groundnuts. And then farmers, distributed types of trials where farmers are trying their own adaptations of these. So what types of legumes do we mean? Because not all legumes are the same. And certainly legumes have been promoted by NGOs and have certainly been used historically in many areas, and yet we're seeing them disappear as maize has dominated the landscape. So what types of legumes do we mean, and which are more successful, and which provide us resilience in a changing climate? So there's annuals, which are very popular with farmers because bean, common bean, peanuts, soybeans can be sold and can be fed to infants and also provide nutrient dense and relish, as they call it, to the maize meals, to a maize-based meal. Then we have what I'm calling shrubbery systems. So not agroforestry, so we have pure agroforestry here that is best for the soil, because the harvest index, as you move across this gradient here, harvest index is high here, so you're taking a lot of the nutrient-rich grain, and so you don't invest much in the soil. Agroforestry certainly builds the soil and has been widely proven to improve soils. But what about intermediate systems that can provide us some nutrients in the form of grain, but also some deep tap roots that can, an increased duration from 4 months of these legumes to 9 months to up to 4 years of this shrub, to in terms of providing carbon fixation inputs and nitrogen fixation. So you can see the level of magnitude of inputs could be higher. Of course, there's a cost in terms of the grain yield will be moderate. So what were our results? Well, original work looking at these across the country, we found that without fertilizer, trying to look at systems that are very sustainable as we think about the fact that fossil fuels are limited long-term, what sort of systems might work in this unimodal rainfall system? Well, monoculture maize on farm, only giving us about 1.3 tons. A rotation, so maize, this is in year two, so in maize grown after groundnuts, which are also known as peanut, or soybean, you can get a slight increase, but it's only when you get to these more perennial agroforestry and maize shrub systems that you start to see actually almost close to the 3-ton goal in the absence of fertilizer. So these were promising systems, but we found that from the participatory research, although there's a lot of interest, these systems have been adopted by some 8,000 farm families in the north. But this system, so we only see about 5% of farmers, the chiefs, and so well-off people that can afford it are actually taking this up without, in the absence of subsidies for this system. So we decided to focus on these systems that are perhaps not quite as good at building soil, but certainly have potential. So what do we mean by maize shrubbery systems? Because you may be familiar with maize agroforestry or rotations, because those are used around the world, but not maize shrubs. So by this we mean what we sometimes call doubled up legumes, shown here at a field day, where we have a shrub that can grow from 1 to 4 years, and it's cut back. So first it's grown here with an understory of soybean, or sometimes groundnuts or a common bean, that gives you 4 months of a grain yield. And then we have this shrub that grows slowly at first and then comes up, provides about 0.5 ton of grain, so not much, but it can be cut, and then as a perennial, it regrows in year two, and then we intercrop it with maize. Because in Malawi, your system has to come back to maize. So what are the implications of this more complex, diverse cropping system for maize? And if you don't get anything out of the talk other than this, I'll be happy, because this is really the bottom line. What we're really interested in is how stable are these yields? Because as I said, we're on a bit of a knife edge in terms of stability, because it's good to see increases to 3 tons, but will that happen in a dry spell, especially as rainfall gets more erratic? Well, here we are comparing the Maize Task Force in 1999 and 2000 throughout the country, divided up into mid-altitude and low-altitude sites. Low-altitude sites are a bit more lower rainfall. And then we have the southern participatory research done over some 5 years, the northern participatory close to about 8 years. So these are two long-term sites. And we've just one look at all of at these different sites, and we compare both with fertilizer and monoculture maize without fertilizer. Now, yield variability is often quantified in terms of coefficient of variation, and we want a low yield variability. We don't want to have to depend on maize and find the 30% variability. Then obviously, a third of the time, you might have no yield or very low yields, and you couldn't feed your family. So monoculture maize, as I said, is quite vulnerable, and certainly this fits with a lot of the literature. As you add fertilizer in modest amounts, even 35 kilograms of nitrogen in this very nitrogen-dependent ecology, maize systems can reduce your variability. Rotating maize, so this is in year two, maize grown after peanut or soybean crop, averaged across those two. Across all the sites, we saw a reduction. And the nice thing about this is that because we only added fertilizer in the year when we had maize there, over 2 years, it's half as much fertilizer, 17.5. So the really exciting thing was that the maize with pigeon pea, the agro-shrubbery system, we saw a further reduction. And this was quite unique, and especially on a countrywide scale and at the participatory long-term sites, we also saw this. So over space and time, we're seeing an increase in stability of maize yields at very moderate levels of fertilizer. So this holds some hope. I also want to look at a number of other ecosystem services. So I'll leave you with two slides. One here, this is what's called a radar chart. And so we've taken monoculture maize with fertilizer, 35 kilograms of fertilizer. So we're holding ourselves to a high standard. We have to beat what is already being promoted. Can rotating maize improve on that in terms of ecosystem services? So this 100% here is monoculture maize with fertilizer. Obviously, monoculture maize without fertilizer would be even lower, and we certainly don't want to see farmers there. So grain yield is the same, and that's very important. We can't have a reduced grain yield in either year, and that's been a problem with some, and only the improved new varieties of legumes are providing these high grain. Although, interestingly, the local maize, at least compared to the historical hybrids, and there's new hybrids coming, has perform the same. So here, these are highly nitrogen-dependent systems, and so we still have not the best genetics, perhaps, on the maize side. We can improve on that. So profitability is increased, but I mostly want to focus here in terms of fertilizer efficiency. So monoculture maize plus fertilizer, we're seeing this is an agronomic fertilizer efficiency term. There's different ways to look at fertilizer efficiency, but for every kilogram of nitrogen fertilizer, we're getting 23 kilograms of maize, which is a nice return. But we have to do better than that. When you're talking 75% of the agricultural budget of Malawi, 16%, according to Andrew Dorwood's recent work, 16% of GDP. This is a huge investment that could go into education and roads. So this has to be really good return for that investment. So if we can double the fertilizer efficiency, in other words, get around 40 kilograms of maize, that's an important lesson. And indeed, there is a legume task force being formed, and or has been formed, and there's movement towards getting improved legume seeds to go out with fertilizer and hybrid maize. We also see a slight increase in protein, which is important, because the grain from the legume is higher protein. But the most important improvements in terms of fertilizer efficiency, not surprising, are when you have pigeon pea there. Because pigeon pea provides a lot more soil cover because it's growing for longer, so it's conserving the soil. We didn't see increases in soil carbon in this work. The long-term trials on using agroforestry systems of ICRAF and my student Tracy Beatty has shown improvements in soil organic matter. But in terms of soil carbon on farmers' fields, it's hard to see changes. But we do have soil cover improvements, so biodiversity, we think, is supported in the soil as well. So fertilizer efficiency is the bottom line here, and you see a big jump. As you saw, yield stability increases, and the grain yield is slightly increased. Protein yields increased as well. So in summary, crop diversification can improve resilience and sustainability in a farmer adoptable way in terms of it requiring only moderate doses of fertilizer. So the country And the farmers do not have to invest as much in fertilizer and get a big bang for their buck of fertilizer. But this required more of a shrubby legume to see big gains in stability. Rotations with grain legumes and with shrubby legumes both improve efficiency and soil conservation. And recent colleagues, Besner Kerr and others, have shown that in the areas where there's been adoption of thousands of farmers, there's actually been increase and amounts in terms of child height by weight gains. So we're seeing now it trickling into getting to the point where we're actually seeing improvements in child welfare, which is what we want to see for the future. Thank you very much.